We're holding on Sof Vav Amar Aleph by the first Mishnah. Mishnah says, Nitlu Shireha, if the Shirayim of the Mincha became Tomei, the previous Mishnah, we talked about if the Klemetz became Tomei, whether you can offer it or not, and we said that the Tzitz gets involved over there, and therefore, so you shouldn't offer it L'Hatchila, but if you did, then the Tzitz makes it acceptable. Now, what about the Klemetz has been taken, but it hasn't been offered yet, and now the Shirayim became Tomei, or Nisrufu Shireha, or if the Shirayim were burnt, of the Shireha, or they were lost. Can we offer the koinets and make the mincha acceptable or not? Obviously, there won't be any shirayim for the koinem to eat. But in other words, the point is, will the mincha be kosher and the owner will have been yotzeh? K'midas Rabbi Yezek Sheira. If we follow the opinion of Rabbi Yezek, then it would be kosher. Because we've learned previously, and the Gemara is going to discuss now as well, that Rabbi Yezek holds consistently that you can sprinkle the blood even if there's no meat and no chalev and a murin of the korban left. Nevertheless, you can still sprinkle the blood. So by the same logic then, if the shirayim are all gone and all you have is the koimetz, which the koimetz is the equivalent of the blood, then it would be kosher. But according to Rabbi Yeshua's logic, it would be possible because according to him, as we learned before, imein boser ein dam, imein dam ein boser, they're interdependent. If there's no meat of the korban left, or chalev, then there's nothing, then the blood can't be sprinkled, and vice versa, so therefore the same way over here, if there's no shirayim, then you can't offer the korban. So, the Gemara says, Omer Rav, Lushinitmu kol shireha. Now that would apply only if all the shirayim, according to Rabbi Yeshua, that is, only if all the shirayim became tomei, then you can't offer the kremes. Abu mitzvah shareh haloi, but Rav says if only some of the shirayim can become tomei, then fine, you can still offer the kremes. Whether you can eat them, you can't eat the rest of the shirayim, because as we learned earlier on Daf Tes, if shirayim shechosru ben kmitza l'haktara, we said that if the shirayim end up missing something between the kmitza and the burning of the kremes, then you can't eat the shirayim. But nevertheless, nevertheless, though, the mincha will still be kosher, and you can offer the koinets. So the Gemara says, Kasaka Daidach, when we hear what Rav is saying, specifically mentions where all the shirayim became tomei versus part of it sounds like he's saying, nitma'ein, that this would only apply if they became tomei and some of them are left over, then even Rabbi Yeshua will allow you to burn the koinets. Over the sort of loy, but it sounds like Rav is saying that if some of them were lost or some of them were burnt, the other two cases of the Mishnah, it sounds like Rav is saying that Rabbi Yeshua would say it's outright possible because, and why is that? Precisely because Rav only uses the word nitma, nitmu, implying only in that case. And we could say because there the tzitz gets involved and b'dieved it makes it that part is still considered to be tahor, and therefore we do physically have the entire shirayim over here, and then so we have the entire physical shirayim and some of it is tamei, but fine, the tzitz allows that maybe to overlook, or maybe allows us to overlook that. But where it's lost or burnt, then it sounds like Rav would be saying that even if you have to have the whole thing, if any part of it was burnt or lost, then no good. Well, the question is, my kasavar. Well, the question is, what does Rav hold? E kasavar shiura milsehi. If he holds that according to Rabbi Yeshua, having anything left over of the mincha is considered significant, afiru over the sort of nami, then the same thing should apply, even if it was lost or burnt, because the same logic would apply. Some of it is still there. The ikastavish yudalav milsehi, and if he holds that according to Rabbi Yeshua, just because something is left over, it's no good, you have to have the entire shirayim left over, well then, nitma my timer, then why would he say if it became part of it, if it became tomei, then he would say the reason why it's not a problem, the miratzat sits, is because the sits makes it acceptable, as we learned yesterday, well by that logic, kol shira anami. Then the same thing should apply to all the shirayim. The sits will have the same effect, whether it's on some of the shirayim and all of it. So what would be the logic for Rav to say, if all of it became tomei, then forget about the tzitz. And if some of it becomes tomei, then the tzitz will help. But, well, if he holds that some of it is fine, then he should hold the same thing. By over the sorof as well, why is he saying by all three of, why is he making this distinction that over the sorof, no good, any small amount of it, it becomes possible, whereas tomei, it's fine as long as it wasn't the whole thing. So the answer is, in fact, Rav does hold that just having something left over is considered significant. And when he says v'nitma, when he says the word v'nitma, he doesn't mean only v'nitma. Our assumption was that because he says only nitma, then he means only that one. But no, as a matter of fact, v'hu adinma ovad v'sarif. Rav would say the same exact thing is true if some of it was lost or some of it was burnt. If it's all, if all the shirayim are lost or burnt, then according to Rabbi Yeshua, no good. If some of it is, then fine. Nothing to do with tzitz, nothing to do with anything like that. Just, he distinguishes between is there any part of it that's left which would have significance? The high deforma nitma. The only reason Rav uses the expression nitma, reshayu nakat. He's only mentioning the first thing in our Mishnah. We had three cases in our Mishnah, nitmu, nisifu, and ahru. So Rav just mentions the first one of them, but we're meant to understand after all that he does mean all three of them. We can imagine, by the way, you know, Rav himself, when he first said the din, he would have figured that it's enough for him to say nitma, and it would be clear to the Talmidim that he means the other two as well, precisely because of this logic that the Gemara has just done over here. So in other words, sometimes you may have that many times you may have a Tana or an Amora says something, and we have to go through and we have to figure out in the Gemara exactly what the meaning was, what he meant by it, and why, and what he meant by it, and come to a conclusion. But the point is, in other words, the Tana or Amora himself, to begin with, would have phrased it that way because he knew. The Pashtun, maybe he taught his Talmidim, maybe he relied on his Talmidim to understand for themselves that it must be that way because there's no other way that it could be. And the Gemara says, Kivitanya. And in fact, we learn a Braisa that supports Rav's understanding of Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua, Kol HaZvachim Shabbat Torah, all Korbanim, we learned this previously on Daf Yud. Kol HaZvachim Shabbat Torah, all Korbanis in the Torah, Shenishdaya Mehen Kezayis Basar, where most of the meat is gone, and all that's left is a Kezayis of meat, or Kezayis Chelev, or Kezayis of Chelev that's going to be burned on the Mizbeach, Zorda Kasadam, then you can still go ahead and sprinkle the blood, because now you have the blood at least has what to be matter. It has a kezayis of chaylev to be matir, to be burnt on the mizbeach, or a kezayis of meat to be matir for the koyanim to eat, for the koyanim or the owner or whatever to eat. So as long as it's either a kezayis of flesh or a kezayis of chaylev, kachafi zayis basav, kachafi zayis chaylev, if it's only half kezayis of one and half of the other, ein ezer kasadam, he cannot sprinkle the blood because the two things don't combine. You need a kezayis of one, you need a kezayis that's going to be used for one purpose. With the exception of the oila, when it comes to a korban oila, after the kachatzis ayis basar, kachatzis ayis chaylev, zerda kasadam, there you can sprinkle the blood, even if you only have left a half kazayis of meat and a half kazayis of chaylev, then you can sprinkle the blood, mitesh kolakolo, because the whole thing is burnt on the mizbeach anyway, and therefore by an oila, there's no actual difference, there's no practical difference between the meat and the chaylev. And the braisa continues, so we see, in other words, so far, we see that the Braisa is not mentioning specifically where it became Tomei. It just said Shenishtayim Mehen, where there was left over a Kezayis of meat or a Kezayis of Chelev, and we see that, and we see, therefore, that it's enough that so it doesn't matter whether Nitma or Ogdu or Nisufu or whatever, because the Braisa didn't distinguish. It just says that all that's left is a Kezayis, and therefore, we see that Rabbi Yeshua allows it. So we see, like Rav is saying, that the same thing would be by the Mincha, as long as there's some of it left. The Pashtus maybe would have said there'd be a Kezayis left, but whatever. The point is, as long as there is that amount of the Shirayim left, then we're good. The Braisa continues, over Mincha. Now, when it comes to a korban mincha for the kula kayemis, even if the entire thing is still intact, lo yizrek, you shouldn't sprinkle the blood. So the Gemara interjects mincha mayavita. Where's the mincha coming over here? There's no sprinkling of blood in connection with a mincha. And the answer is, I'm going to pop a mincha misafin. The answer is, the braisa here is not talking about the regular mincha that comes independently. It's talking about the mincha misafin that accompanies certain korbanos, as we've learned before. Now, why would you need to say that? So in other words, the point is that all of the meat and all of the chaylev of the animal, of the animal portion of the korban is gone, but you have left the entire mincha misafin is still intact. So Sakutaiduk, you would have thought, Haru Vabi Zebach Faasya, since the Minchat Sasochim comes together with the Korban, Kigufid is Zivchadamya, therefore it has the status of the body of the Korban, and therefore the same way as if there was a Kazayas of meat or a Kazayas of Chelev, it would be fine to sprinkle the blood, the same way if there's a Kazayas or even the whole thing of the Minchat Sasochim, Hamash Malon, and therefore the Braisa tells us that not so. It has to be according to Rabbi Yeshua that at least some part of the actual animal itself is left. Well, in the case of an independent mitzvah where there is no animal in the first place, then we have to have that there's some part of the shirayim left, and therefore, and that brings us to Rav's din that it doesn't matter how part of the shirayim is unavailable, whether because of tumah or being burnt or being lost. Nevertheless, as long as some of it is still there, then Rabbi Yeshua will allow you to burn the fragments. Okay. The Gemara says, "Minohani mibi." Where do we know this from? This point that was saying that even if there's that even if for, in particular, the Gemara is going to focus on how we know that there's, if there's only a kizayis of chalev left, that we're able to that we're able to sprinkle the blood. Mela, if there's meat left over, okay, there's going to be what for the koyanim or for the owner to eat. So therefore, we have reason to sprinkle the blood. But if it's just chalev left over, how do we know that nevertheless we should sprinkle the blood? Maybe we should say, look, the burning of the chalev is not really necessary for the validity of the korban. So therefore we should say then nobody's eating it after all. It's being burned on the mizbeach. So maybe we should say the chalev is not significant enough if some of it is left over to be able to sprinkle the blood. How do we know that not? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, Umotu Bo, Mishum Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. So Rabbi Yochanan says in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, some say that it was actually in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, who was the same Rabbi Yeshua of our Syria. Omachus said, according to the first version, Rabbi Shmuel is explaining Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. According to the second version, Rabbi Yeshua is explaining his own opinion. Omachra, the pasuk says that the Kohen should sprinkle the blood, the hikter achelav l'reach nechayach l'Hashem, and he should burn the chelav as a sweet fragrance for Hashem, reach nechayach, as we learned in Zvachim, that it's nachas ruach l'fanav, Hashem takes pleasure in the fact that Hashem told us to bring korbanos and we listen. So therefore, so we see, since the pasuk mentions sprinkling the blood and burning the chelav, so we see chelev ba'afal pishein basa. So we see the chelev alone is a reason enough to sprinkle the blood, even if there's no meat. Okay. Now, when we talk about the emurim, we sometimes think of chelev as being synonymous with emurim, but they really aren't. Chelev is certain areas of fat in the animal which you have to, not only you have to burn them on the mizbeach, but also we're not allowed to eat them from a domestic animal. We'll learn all about it in Masechta the whole investigation. But in addition, you actually have, together with the emurim, there are also certain parts that are perfectly mutter for us to eat, but they still have to be offered on the mizbeach. Among them, the Gemara is going to single out yeseres u'shtei kloyes, the yeseres and the two kidneys. The yeseres, Rashi explains on Chumash, means the diaphragm. The pasuk describes it yeseres ala kovid, so then it would be the diaphragm to which the liver is attached. There's other explanations that it means some part of the liver itself, or a section of the liver itself. Whatever the case, the point is, you're perfectly allowed to eat liver once you kasher it properly, as we'll learn in Masechta Cholin. You're perfectly allowed to eat kidneys. Nevertheless, they're still offered on Mizbeach, so they're not chelev, but they are emurim. So the Gemara says, "V'ashkuchan chelev." Fine. So we see the pasuk is telling us by using the word chelev that even if there's only chelev left over of the carbon, then you're able to sprinkle the blood. As far as Tosfos points out, the fact that if there's only meat left over, that you can also sprinkle the blood, that we learn from a different pasuk, which we've learned before in Zvachim, that since the pasuk says, "V'arsisa oilos secha bos of adam," the pasuk mentions you should bring your oilos, the flesh and the blood. So from that we learn that it's good enough to sprinkle the blood, even if the only thing afterwards you have left is flesh. So fine, so we understand that, but we understand if there's flesh, if there's meat left over, and we understand if there's chelev, because of this pasuk in Achremos that specifically mentions chelev. Yeseres or shtei kloyes minolon. What if all the chelev is gone, and all that's left is the yeseres and the two kidneys, or less than that? Kizayis of that. Minolon. How do we know that also that's good enough to sprinkle the blood? So we know that it works. The Katani, because our Mishnah had said, because of the Braisa before that we just quoted had said over Mincha, afilo kula kayemes layizrit, that when the Mincha, and we explain that means Minchas Nesachim, even if all of it is still intact, you can't sprinkle the blood if the whole body of the animal is gone, and that implies Mincha hu layizrit, only because it's only the Mincha left over, and the Mincha is only secondary to the carbon, then therefore you can't sprinkle the blood. Oh, yeseres or shtei kloyes yizrit. So the implication of the braisa is that if there's any part of what's to be offered on the mizbeach left, even if it's only the yeseres or shtei kloyes, which are not chelev, then it sounds like the braisa is saying that you could sprinkle it minolan. So where do we get that? Where do we get that? That you can sprinkle the blood in that case? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan didei Omar. Rabbi Yochanan himself gave the following answer. Before we had Rabbi Yochanan saying, in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, or in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya. And by the way, when we use the word Mishum in the Gemara, as we had before, then it means he didn't hear it directly from him. And he couldn't. Rabbi Yochanan lived long after, lived a few generations after Rabbi Shmuel and after Rabbi Yeshua. So he didn't hear it directly from them. It means that there was a chain which can be traced back to them. Anyway, so now Rabbi Yochanan himself is giving an answer. That, because the pasuk says l'reyach michoyach, that pasuk that mentions the chalev says you should offer the chalev as a pleasing fragrance to Hashem, from which we can learn kol sha'atam malo l'reyach michoyach. Anything which is being offered on the mizbeach, which makes that sweet fragrance for Hashem, is a valid reason to sprinkle the blood. Well, the yesedas of shtei kloyes, they may not be chalev, but nevertheless, Hashem, so to speak, appreciates when we do it. Still nachas ruach afanai, that Hashem told us to do it, and we do it. And they still have the din also that we learned in Mizvachim, that for example, if you were to roast them off the Mizbeach and then put them on the Mizbeach, then you're not Yotze, this din of Reach Nichreach, meaning they have to be burnt on the MB to begin with when the fire starts getting to them, it has to be on the Mizbeach. So therefore, they're considered just as much as the Emurim as the Chelev itself, and therefore the same din would apply. Okay, well, the Gemara points out then, so why do we need the word Chelev and the Reach Nichreach? So the itzruch l'michtav chela, the itzruch l'michtav l'reach nechayach. The pasuk does have to tell us both points. We couldn't have just derived one from the other. Because of chelev, if the pasuk had only said the word chelev, have amina, then you would think chelev ain yeseres or shtei kloyes loy. So it only works when it comes to chelev, but it doesn't work to because yeseres or shtei kloyes, because after all those are not chelev. Therefore, kosev achmana, reach nechayach. Therefore, the Torah writes the word reach nechayach, and that teaches us that the yeseres or shtei kloyes have the same rule. Because of Rahman of the Reach Nechoyach, but if the Torah had only told us Reach Nechoyach, have a mincha, then you would think, look, the mincha as well as Reach Nechoyach, because the mincha's nesachim, ultimately that mincha gets burnt on the mizbeach as well, the flour and oil mixture. Therefore, the Torah says chaylev. So fine, it's not meant to be only chaylev. We're saying it does include yeseres or shtei kloyes, but at least it has to be something which is actually part of the animal itself. So therefore, in other words, we understand from that the word reach nechayach is coming to only include something which is similar to chaylev. So it's almost like a klal trat or something. So we're saying that, but it's not really, because each of them is a prat of its own kind of. But the point is, in other words, it tells us to modify that and realize that the word reach nechayach is not across the board. It doesn't include anything which is reach nechayach. It has to be something which is similar to chelev, namely that it's part of the actual animal. So when it comes to a mincha, again, when it comes to an independent mincha, where there's no yeseres or shtei kloyes, and there's none of that, and instead you have chomets and shirayim, then we're back to, that brings us back to Rav's din, that as long as some of the shirayim are left, then you can go ahead and sprinkle the blood. And then you can go ahead and offer the chomets. The Mishnah says, "Shaloi b'kli shoreis." If the koymetz of the mincha was not placed in a kli shoreis, we've talked about before that you have there's four main avodas with a mincha, just like there are four main avodas with an animal korban, and the kmitza corresponds to the shchita, and then the placing the koymetz in the kli shoreis corresponds to kabbalah. So there's no question, and Rashi says, everybody, we're going to have a machloikus in the mission over here, if you didn't put the koymetz in the cave, in a kli shoreis, whether it's kosher, everybody agrees it has to be in a kli shoreis to begin with. And then Rashi points out, we're going to learn later in the Masechta, a discussion about that, where they ask Rebbe, how do we know that? How do we know that a mincha has to be in a kli shoreis in the first place? And we're going to have a point that he's going to bring from a pasuk later on in the Masechta, on Daf Tzadik Vav, to explain that. So there's no question it has to be in a kli shoreis before the kohen takes the mitzvah. The question is, what happens now if you didn't place the koymetz in the kli shoreis posel? So then it will be posel. But Rav Shimon makshir. But Rav Shimon says it's kosher. Now the Gemara is going to discuss. Does that mean that according to Rav Shimon, you don't even have to put it in the kli shoreis at all, or does Rav Shimon just mean that you don't have to offer it in the kli shoreis? You can take it then out of the kli shoreis and put it on the mizbeach with your hand. We'll see that in the Gemara. Another din, if he offered the koymetz in two, so he put half the koymetz on the fire of the mizbeach, and then later on the other half, kshera, then the mincha is kosher. So, So it's actually a point about this that Rashi is saying that everybody agrees that the mincha has to be in a pli shoris to begin with. Rav Shimon learns that even if it was never in a pli shoris at all, it would still be kosher. So apparently the Rambam learns, even though we have that drasha from Rebbe later in the Masechta, Rav Shimon doesn't have to agree with that drasha. In any case, so again, if the mincha was not in a keli in the first place, according to Rashi, everybody would agree it's possible. According to the Rambam, the Rav Shimon would argue that it's kosher. If the koimetz was not placed in the kli shoris, then everybody agrees, both Rashi and the Rambam, that Rav Shimon will say it's kosher, and the Chachamim will say it's possible. Now we're saying, the last point of the Mishnah was, if you took the koimetz and divided it into two, first you offered one half, then the other half, then Sheira, then the mincha is kosher. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yehuda b'Rei Rav Chiya, my time is Rav Shimon. Why does Rav Shimon say this? Also, we learned earlier in the Masechta. Why does Rav Shimon hold that it's kosher if you didn't put the mincha in the if you didn't put it in the kli shoris? And according to Rashi, specifically the koimetz, and according to the Rambam, even the mincha as a whole. So the reason is Omar Kro, because the pasuk says Kodesh Kodoshim He Kachatas V'Ha'Asher. The pasuk says about a korban mincha that it is Kodesh Kodoshim like a chatas and like an asher." Now, why do we need to compare it to two different korbanos? It's enough to say Kodesh Kodashim He, and not enough to mention examples of korbanos of a kodshei kodshin, let alone both of them. So the reason is it teaches us. It teaches us Bola Oivda B'Yad. So it comes to teach us that if he comes to do the avoda with his bare hands, kachatas Oivda B'Yamin kachatas, then he can do that, but then he has to do it specifically with his right hand, as we've learned Udiyon the Masechta, and we learned in Zvachim that whenever it says that the Torian has to do something with his finger, then it means the finger of his right hand. And since the pasuk says that with a chatas he has to dip his finger in and then daub it on the four corners of the mizbeach, then it means he has to do it with his right hand specifically. We learned Udiyon the Masechta. We talked about doing the avoda with the left, where Reb Shimon says that it's kosher in certain cases, but there are cases where even Reb Shimon agrees that you have to do it with the right hand, namely specifically where it says etzva and it says koyin, and this is one of those examples. So therefore, the etish of mincha to chatas teaches us the same way the mincha can be like a chatas, meaning that if he's koyin is going to do it with his bare hand, then it has to be specifically with his right hand, the chatas. The kli, on the other hand, if he wants to do the avoda using a keli. Meaning, in other words, that he's going to actually. So b'yad would mean he doesn't put it in a kli shoris. B'kli would mean he does put it in a kli shoris. Oivda b'smel ka'asham. Then he would be able to do that even when he's holding the keli in his left hand, and then it would be like an asham where Reb Shimon says, given that with an asham, the blood is sprinkled on those, the blood is applied to the mizbeach from the keli. You take the keli and dash the blood against the mizbeach. And it doesn't say etzva over there, and Reb Shimon holds, in fact, that it would be kosher to do it with the left hand, as we've learned before. So therefore, in other words, we learned before that according to the Chachamim, if it says either kohuna or etzva, that says either the word koyin or the word etzva, then it means you need the right hand, and therefore pretty much all avodas are possible with the left hand, and we'll see with certain rare exceptions that we talked about yesterday, whereas Reb Shimon holds that no, it has to specifically say etzva in order for it to require the right hand, and since by the Oshem it never says etzva, and the avodah of the Oshem is not done using the etzva, you do it by dashing the blood out of the container, out of the mizra, onto the wall of the mizra, to the corners of the mizra. Therefore, according to him, that could be done with the left hand, and therefore, by the same token, the hekesh of a mincha to an Oshem teaches us that according to him, a mincha can also be done with the left hand, provided that you're doing it like an Oshem, namely in a pli shoris. So Rabbi Yehuda b'Rei Rav Chiya is saying that that's why the Shimon says that the mincha does not have to be, that the koimetz of the mincha according to Rashi, or the entire mincha according to the Rambam, does not need to be in a kli shoris, is because of that hekesh. Rabbi Yanai Omar, Rabbi Yanai learns different. It does have to be in a kli shoris to begin with, but Kibin Shekomsa, the kli shoris, Rabbi Shimon, when he says that you take the koimetz, sure, that has to be from the kli shoris. But ma'aleu ma'ktura afilu behem yonai, at that point that he could take up. He doesn't have to put in a second Kli Shoris. According to Rav Shimon, says Rav Yana, it would be enough that he takes it up to the Mizbeach, and he can offer it after the Behem Yonoi, even if he's holding it using his belt, after the Mekedah Shocheres, or even if he holds it using an Udenweir jug, which we're going to learn in a couple of Dafkin, that's the shame, that Udenweir, the Chola Alma, is possible for Kli Shoris. Nevertheless, in other words, the point is that according to him, the Kmitza has to be done with the Kmitza has to be done with the right hand. Tosfos points out, appointed of Yehuda Breda Priya, he learns it again from this comparison to the Chafas. Because after all, the Kmitza has to be done with his hand. You don't do Kmitza with a Kali. So of necessity, that part is going to have to be like a Chafas and therefore be with the right hand. According to Rabbi Yanai, Tosfos points out that we learned in the first paragraph when we discussed that point, we learned that Rabbi Yanai had a Gzeder Shogah from the word Yad, that it mentions the hand in connection with a Metzorah, where there it says clearly in the Pasuk that it means his right hand. And we said therefore we can learn from that the same way the Kmitza, which is also done with the Kohen's hand, has to be with his right hand. So both of Yehuda Breda Priya and Rav Yanai are both going to have a source that Rav Shimon says the Kmitza has to be done with the right hand. But according to Yehuda Breda Priya, the point is that according to him, the Kali itself could be in the left hand, and there doesn't even have to be a Kali in the first place. He could do the whole thing with his hand and not use a Kali at all. Whereas according to Rav Yanai, there has to be a Kali to begin with. He has to take the permits from the Kli Shoris. But at that point, we don't care whether he's using a Kali to bring it to the Mizbeach, even if he's holding it inside his belt, or even if he's holding it in an Udenweir jug. Nevertheless, it's fine. Now, how does that work? How is it not a matter of chatzitza? So Rav Chaim Brisker explains, because any time that you have an avodah that can be done with the left hand, then by definition, it doesn't mean that it needs to be done with the actual Kohen's body. In other words, the idea would be, when you have an avodah that has to be done with the right, then the Torah insists it be done with the Kohen's own body, and therefore that there not be a chatzitza. But here, since according to Rav Shimon, it can be done with the left hand, then that means we don't care about a chatzitza. And then the Chazon Ish talks about it differently and explains that there can be different ways where you wrap your hand in something and it's a chatzitza versus where you have a handle to hold the object, which is not necessarily considered a chatzitza. The Gemara mentions in Sukkah, for example, that when it comes to taking wool of an estrog, you have to do it with your bare hands. But nevertheless, for example, the Gemara talks about over there that if you hold it using a table not in a degrading way. The Gemara gives an example over there. If you hold the Dalet Minim inside a pot, let's say, then you wouldn't be Yotze. But if you hold it inside a respectable container, then you would be Yotze, and we're not worried about Chatzitza. So in the same vein, the Chazon Ish says over here there could be that kind of distinction as well. When he's using his belt, or he's using an Udenweir Kli, then we're saying, in other words, he's not wrapping his hand with it, he's using it as a container to hold the thing, and therefore it wouldn't be considered a Chatzitza. So according to Rav Yanai, you do have to have a Kli Shoris at the beginning, but you don't have to have a Kli Shoris afterwards. You can then take it up to the Mizbeach, even with something else, which is not a Kli Shoris at all, and offer it on the Mizbeach. The Gemara continues. Another way of looking at Rav Shimon's opinion, Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar, Hakol Moedim B'Kovetz Shetoron Kiddush. No, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says everybody, but even Rav Shimon, will agree that the Kovetz, after it's taken, you do have to place it in a Kli Shoris. But Rav Shimon holds, once you put it in a Kli Shoris, then you can take it out of there by hand and offer it on the Mizbeach, whereas according to Rav Nachman Yitzchak's understanding, the Chachamim would require that you take it all the way to the Mizbeach and put it on the fire from the Kli Shoris. So three different ways of explaining Rav Shimon's opinion. So according to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Rav Shimon will hold. Fine, the Kali can be held, and it can be held in his right or his left hand. Kachatas v'chasham, but it does require a Kali. So again, to recap, Rav Yehuda Breda Rav Chiya says that according to Rav Shimon, you don't need a Kali at all. According to Rav Yanai's understanding of Rav Shimon, you do need a keli that the kmitza is taken from, but then you don't need a keli to place it into. And according to you can bring it up to the Mizbeach even if in his belt or even in an Udenweir jug. According to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, everybody agrees you have to place the kmitza in the Kli Shoris, but then Rav Shimon would hold it, you can take it out of there. Okay. So the Gemara says, Meisri. I have a contradiction on Rabbi Yehuda Brevi, the previous understanding. A Braisa says, Hector Chalovim Ve'evarim, the burning of fats and limbs of the Korbanos, the Eitzim, and the wood that's going to be brought onto the Mizbeach, Rashi points out, we don't mean wood for a korban, for an independent korban, like we learned about a few days ago. Rather, we're talking about the regular wood that's being brought for the wood pile of the Mizbeach, which also had the Kohenim have to bring it up onto the Mizbeach. So that, the Helon, Bein B'yad, Bein B'kli, he took it up to the Mizbeach, whether by hand or whether in a keli, Bein B'yamin, Bein B'smir, whether he took it in his right hand or his left hand, shaven, then those would be kosher. They do have to be brought up to the Mizbeach, but the Braisa is saying, That would be fine even if he brought them up in the left hand. The pashtus for Braisa is according to Reb Shimon. So Tosfos points out actually that the Gemara could have answered that this Braisa is like Reb Shimon. And according to the Chachamim specifically, you need Yamin. But on the other hand, Tosfos points out that maybe the Rabbanon would allow it even at least when it comes to burning the limbs and the fat, the same way as we learned yesterday, for example, that there's no problem carrying the pieces of the korban to the Mizbeach with the left hand. We talk about when with the korban Talmud, for example, where the first Kohen in line holds the head of the animal in one hand and the right leg of the animal in the other hand, in the left hand, and that's fine because it's only bringing them to the kevesh. Tosfos discusses maybe even according to the Chachamim, maybe not only bringing them to the kevesh would be fine with the left hand, but even throwing them into the fire would also be fine with the left hand. Or maybe not. Maybe this Braisa is specifically according to the Shimon. In any case, the Braisa says, so if he brought those up, Bein B'yad, Bein B'kli, whether by hand or in a keli, Bein B'yamin, Bein B'smir, whether with the right hand or the left hand, kosher. Then they're kosher. And the Braisa continues with more examples, like Klimitz Vaktoris Valavona, the Klimitz of a Mincha, and the Ktoris and the Lavona, same thing, Shehelem Ben B'yad Ben B'kli, if he brought him up to the Mizbeach, whether by hand or in a Keli, Ben B'yamin Ben B'smeo, whether in the right hand or the left hand, Shehelem, then they're also kosher. Tosfos wonders, we have six things over here, why not just give them as one big list of six? Why divide them into three? So Tosfos says maybe what it is the Tana of this Braisa had learned them three at a time. He had learned three of them from his Rebbe, and then three of them later, or maybe he learned from two different Rebbeim, and therefore he formulated it that way in the Braisa, in groups of three, because that way, that's how he remembered it. In any case, the point is, so therefore, this is a contradiction to Rabbi Yehuda, who said that if you're going to use the right hand, even according to Reb Shimon, you need specifically the right hand. It comes out from this Braisa that no, even if you're doing it by hand, you can do it in the left hand. So, in fact, Chedushim Amiyuchasim LaRashba points out it's kind of a question on Reb Nachman Beitzchok as well. He says that everybody agrees that you need to put the koymets into the kli shoris, and yet the Braisa is saying that you can do it by hand. So fine, he would explain that it means that after you put in a kli shoris, you took it out there with your hand and brought it up to the Mizbeach, and Reb Shimon would say that it's fine. But the question would be on Rabbi Yehuda Ben Yerachia, who clearly says if you're doing it with your bare hand, then it has to be with your right hand. The answer is Amalach Rabbi Yehuda Ben Yerachia, it's Dodin Katani. He will say the Braisa is actually saying kind of the two things in one. When it says Ben B'yamin Ben B'smel, it means you have to divide it to the sides. The Braisa is saying a short way of saying it, but you have to actually break it down. B'yad B'yamin. When the Braisa says Ben B'yad Ben B'kli Ben B'yamin Ben B'smel, it doesn't mean that all those permutations are kosher. It means they go together. B'yad means B'yamin. If you're going to do it by hand, then it has to be with the right hand. B'kli, and if you're doing it with the keli, Ben B'yamin Ben B'smel, then it can be right hand or left hand. So the Braisa is not contradicting him once we understand that Ben B'yad Ben B'kli means with the hand there's going to be one rule of the following that we're going to say, and B'kli there's going to be both rules that we're going to be saying. Okay, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring another proof. This one is going to be against Reb Nachman. A Braisa says, Komse Shaloi Mitoi Kli Sharis. If he took the koimets not from a Kli Sharis, for Kidshoi Shaloi Kli Sharis, and then he put the koimets also not on a Kli Sharis, the Helo, and he brought it up to him, and he offered it all not in a Kli Sharis. So there was no, There was no klisharis involved at all. This is the girsa we have in front of us, and the Gemara we'll talk about in a second. We'll talk about in a second a different alternate girsa on this. So here, according to the way we have the braisa in front of us in the Gemara, everything was without a klisharis. There was no klimitz from a kli. The klimitz was not done from a klisharis. It was not placed in a klisharis afterwards. It was brought up to the mizbeach and offered not in a klisharis. Possel, then it would be possel. Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Shimon Nachshirin, the matan kli. Rabbi Lozer, and Rabbi Shimon say that's kosher as long as it was placed into some kind of keli, and into some kind of keli, even not a kli shardis, then it would be fine. So it comes out like not like Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman is saying that everybody agrees that the koimus requires to be placed in a kli shardis. So how would this braisa fit with Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok's understanding? Now, there is a different girsa that takes out the word shaloi, the first shaloi. So according to that girsa, it would be that he did the klimitz from a kli shardis, but then he put it in something other than a kli shardis. So in fact, there are early prints of the Gemara that don't have it, and there's discussion among the Achronim about how this goes exactly, and different opinions on that subject. About whether in fact we're talking about that it was never in a kli shardis in the first place, or are we talking about that at least it was in a kli shardis in the beginning, and afterwards, the klimitz was not placed in a kli shardis. Again, following the Rambam's understanding in Pirush HaMishnayos that Rav Shimon is not requiring it to be in a kli shardis at all, then it would work out with the word shaloi, but that the whole thing was not in a kli shardis. And still they're going to say it's kosher, whereas the other way of looking at it is, according to Rashi, it would be that at least it had to be in a kli shardis at the beginning, because Rashi had learned, again, that even Rav Shimon holds that it has to be to begin with. Anyway, the point is that regardless of that point, the point is as far as the koimitz not being placed in a kli shardis, the braisa is clearly saying that Rav Shimon says it's fine, whereas according to Rav Nachman Yitzchok, it would not be fine. The answer is Ema, you have to correct the wording of the braisa when it says that they're saying it's kosher, bim matan kli, when it's placed in a keli, that what it actually means is mi matan kli ve'elach. After it was placed in a kli shardis, then we don't need a kli shardis anymore. From the matan kli and onward, to bring it to the mizbeach and to burn it on the mizbeach, according to Rav Shimon, doesn't require a keli, but you do need a keli in order to put it in the first place. So according to him, the braisa doesn't contradict him, provided we make that minor change there. Okay. The Gemara says Toshma, fine, but let's bring from a braisa. The Chum disagree with the Rav Elazar and Rav Shimon, and they say koimitz tone kli shardis. The koimitz requires to be placed in a kli shardis. Ketzad, what does that mean? Koimitz in the kli shardis. You have to take the koimitz from the kli shardis, or makadsha the kli shardis. You have to place the koimitz and make it holy in another kli shardis, or maler makchira the kli shardis, and then you bring it up to the mizbeach and you offer it in that kli shardis. So the Chum is saying every part of the process requires a kli shardis, and again, because they're comparing it to the avodas of the blood, where it has to be in the mizrak, and then from the mizrak it goes to the mizbeach. Rav Shimon says no. Kivin shekomtzem, it's kli shardis. Once you took the koimitz from the kli shardis, malo maktira shalev kli shardis, then you can bring it up and you can offer it not from a kli shardis, but dayos, and it's good enough. So we see that according to Rav Shimon, you don't need to put the koimitz in a second kli shardis, not like Rav Nachman Yitzchok. The answer is Ema. Again, you can correct the wording of the braisa a little bit. Kivin shekomtza, the kidshoi, once he took the koimitz and made it holy, big kli shardis, by putting it into a kli shardis, malo matire, then at that point he can take it up and offer it on a mizbeach for dayo, and that's good enough. So in other words, what we do is we take the wording of the braisa. Take the word shaloi the kli shardis. Take the word when it says that he took the koimitz from a kli shardis and then he brought it up without a kli shardis, means that in between it was placed in a kli shardis. In fact, Shutum Kubetzis actually takes out the word shaloi the kli shardis altogether. So then the braisa, what he's saying, that Rav Shimon says kivin shekomtz in the kli shardis malo maktire, once he took it the koimitz from a kli shardis, then he can take it up and burn it. But according to Rav Nachman Yitzchok, the vote would be even Rav Shimon would say that you have to put it in a second kli shardis, and then at that point you can take it out of there and take it with your bare hands to the mizbeach and offer it. According to that, you don't need, even Rav Nachman Yitzchok does not hold that Rav Shimon would require a kli shardis for the halacha and for the haktara, and therefore that would be according to him what the braisa is saying. Okay, the Gemara says Toshma, let's bring another proof. We learn a braisa. Komatz bimino. If he took the komatz with his right hand, the nosam bismola, and Kohen put it, took that komatz and put it in his left hand without putting it in a keli. Yatsu bimino. Then he has to return it to his right hand, because again the avoda has to be done. All the avodas have to be done with the right hand. But if he put it in his left hand, and then the chishuv aleha, now while it's in his left hand, he had in mind about it a thought that would make it possible to tickle. Ben chutz the mekoma, ben chutz the zmano, whether he had a thought of eating or burning it, chutz the mekoma, which will make it pivotal, or chutz the zmano, which will make it possible. Either way, possible the embryo chorus, either way, possible. But there's no chorus involved, because as we've learned before, it's only gonna make it pigle, only the mishu roi la avoda, only when it is suitable for the avoda, and the left hand, as the Chacham was saying, throughout the sugya, is not, and here we're talking actually, this braisa would be even according to, this part of the braisa actually is according to Reb Shimon, like I was gonna quote in a couple of lines. So this part of the braisa is according to Reb Shimon, and still, and we're saying that as long as it's in his left hand, it's not kosher. It has to be, as Rabbi Yehuda Breja Reb Chiya had said, according to Reb Shimon, if he's going to do it with his bare hand, it has to be the right hand. So therefore, as long as he has it in his left hand, then it's not considered Dovah HaRoi LaAvodah. So if he has that in mind, possible the Enbei Kares, then it will be possible, but there won't be Kares because there's another psul together with the pickle. Lishna Achrina, another version. This is in parenthesis over here, and the Shittu Mukubetzis and Birkas Hazevach. Take it out, and instead they have the word Biminoi, that if he had it, that if he has it in his right hand, the chishuv, if while it was in his right hand, chishuv ala chutz l'mekoymei, and he has a thought of chutz l'mekoymei, then as usual, possible the end by chorus, then it'll be possible, and there's no chorus, because there's never chorus for chutz l'mekoymei, chutz l'zmanei, tigul, but if it's chutz l'zmanei, then it'll be tigul, v'chayavon ala chorus, and a person will be chayav chorus for eating it. Give Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, that's what Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon say. So we see so far that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon is clearly saying that he are clearly saying that as long as it's in his left hand, then it's impossible for him to make it pickle. Only if he has the thought while he has it in his right hand, because the right hand is kosher for avodah and the left is not, which contradicts Rabbi Nachman's understanding that as long as he places it in a kli shoris later on, then he'll be fine. Now this is how Rashi learns. Shittim Kubetzes and various other Achronim ask a number of questions on Rashi, and they explain, we're talking about that he did the Kmitza to begin with his left hand. So then we're saying that it would be no good because then it's possible because of doing Kmitza with his left hand, which everybody would agree was possible. Then there's yet another explanation that we're talking about that he did the halacha when it's in his left hand, and then the point would be we learned way back in Zvachim that if his zor does halacha, is it considered possible? Well, if he does it with his left hand, then it would be considered like it was done by a zor, or at least even if Reb Shimon would hold that it's kosher, then it would be possible to rabbanah. Okay, so then according to that explanation, we're talking about when it says bismoloi means not where he took, in other words, according to them, the braisa would be talking about a few different cases. According to Rashi, it's all one case. He took the kmitza in his right hand and then placed it in his left hand. If now he still has it in his left hand and has a thought of pigle, then it will not be pigle, only possible. According to the Shittim Kubetzis and the various other Achronim, it's two different things. If he did the kmitza with his right hand and put it in his left hand, put it back in his right hand. If he did the kmitza with his left hand, then he can't make it pigle, only possible, because then there's another psul involved as well. So anyway, that's pointed out Elazar and Reb Shimon. As soon as he put it in his left hand, just the very fact of putting it in his left hand already made it possible, and you can't put it back in the right hand and make it kosher. As the Gemara explains, my timer. Why is that? Because why did the Chacham hold that just putting it in the left hand is enough to make it possible on the spot? The reason is, Mishum the Boy Kedusha the Kli, because they hold the Koimetz has to be made holy in a Kli Charis. The Kivin Shinosna the Snow, by putting it in his left hand, Nasa Kedam Shinishbach, with Sava Behema, the Ritzbah, the Osloi, that it would be comparable to blood of a korban, which spilled out directly from the neck of the animal and landed directly on the floor without having to be placed in a Kli, without being placed in a Kli Charis. And they collected it and placed in a Kli Charis, Shapostle, which as we learned in Zrachim, such a korban is possible. If it was in the Kali and then it fell out of there onto the floor, then fine, you can get it. You can stop it up onto the floor and put it back in the cavity. But if it fell from, if it spurted from the neck directly onto the floor, then it's possible. The same way over here. The koimetz has to immediately be placed in a Kli Charis. If instead he puts it in his left hand, then it will be the equivalent of the blood spilling, and therefore it will be possible. So that's how the Chachamim hold. Now, Mikval, the Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, Lebo, Mats, and Kli. Now, the implication is evidently that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon do not require it to be placed in a Kli. Because then how could they? Then it would be the same logic as the Chachamim, that it would be that it would be possible because it would be possible and you can't put it back in and you can't put it back in the right hand. Rashi points out that even Reb Shimon, when he allows you to use the left hand for Kabbalah, that's only when you're using a keli. He were talking about doing in effect Kabbalah, putting the claimants into the left hand. Even he would have to agree that it's a possible that's a possible Kabbalah. So this is a contradiction on Reb Nachman Yitzchok, who says that that even Reb Shimon definitely requires it to be placed in a cave. So Tzurta, yeah, it is a contradiction on him. So we only have two opinions left. So again, we started out with three ways of understanding Reb Shimon's opinion. Reb Yehuda Breide Reb Chia, that he could do the whole thing with his right hand and not use a keli at all. Reb Yanai, that he has to have a Kli Charis for the mincha to begin with, but afterwards we don't care what kind of keli he puts the credits in, or even if he doesn't put in a keli at all, even if he holds it in his belt, for example. And Reb Nachman Yitzchok, who's saying that even Reb Shimon agrees it has to be placed in a Kli Charis, and the question is only what happens after that. Now we've slugged up Reb Nachman Yitzchok on the strength of this Braisa, and therefore we only have two opinions left. So, of those two opinions, how does this Braisa fit with them? Rav Yehuda Breide Reb Chia Messiah. Well, this last Braisa supports Rav Yehuda Breide Reb Chia's opinion that he can do the whole thing with his right hand and not use a keli at all. And therefore, according to Reb Shimon, even he placed it in his left hand, we don't care. He's able to put it back in his right hand because according to him, no keli is necessary in the first place. Rav Yanai Leimatevitz Yufta, but shouldn't it also be a contradiction on Rabbi Yanai, who says that Rabbi Yehuda Breide Reb Chia had said if he's going to do it with his hand, then it has to be the right hand throughout. Rabbi Yanai had said as long as you took it from a Kli Charis, then Rabbi Shimon would allow you to use the left hand, but here we see that you have to, even Rabbi Shimon is saying you have to put it back in your right hand, so then that should be a contradiction on Rabbi Yanai. And the answer is, fine, I'm an Amora, I can't argue with Tanoim, but I have a Braisa that we had on Amor Aleph, where we said that where we had a group of three things and another group of three things, where we said that if they're offered, that if he brought them up, b'yad, ben b'kli, ben b'yamin, ben b'smol, then Rav Shimon had said they're fine. And the lavlet stud in Katani. Now before on Amud Aleph we said in order to make the Braisa work according to Rabbi Yehuda Breide Reb Chia's opinion, you would have to say that it means tzadin, that it meant biyad is only with the right hand. The kli could be either right or left. Rabbi Yanai says I don't have to accept that parsing of the Braisa. I can say that it means that the Braisa means exactly what it sounds like. Right, left, hand, keli, it's all fine. As long as it was in a kli charis to begin with, anything goes after that according to Rabbi Shimon. Therefore, there is a Tanna who supports what I'm saying, who says that as long as it was in a Kli Charis at the beginning, then we're good, and therefore the Braisa that's saying, where Shimon says, if you have it in the right hand, put it back in your left hand, and then put it in your left hand, put it back in your right hand, and continue from there, Reb Yanai says that would follow my understanding of Reb Shimon, and therefore just because there's another Braisa that contradicts me, that doesn't matter, I still have a Braisa on my side. So in other words, yes, so the b'risa that says that we have to put it back in his right hand, fine, that b'risa would be against me, but fine, that doesn't matter because the b'risa on Amar Aleph, provided that we don't understand that what Tzadin says, like what I'm saying, that you don't even need to return it to the right hand, Reb Shimon would be perfectly fine leaving it in your left hand, leaving the koyin, leaving it in his left hand, and taking it up from his back and doing it that way. Between the Chachamim and Reb Shimon, the halacha is like the Chachamim, as it usually is. Yochad v'Rab malacha k'Rabim. There is actually a point over here, though, that the Rambam does bring something like Reb Shimon to a certain extent. Namely, the Rambam does bring the b'risa that we said that bein b'yad bein b'kli bein b'yamin bein b'smol, the Rambam does bring that as halacha. So what does that mean? Is the Rambam passing like Reb Shimon? So different mefoshim explain different possibilities. Even the Tanakh, the Lachem Mishnah talks about that. Even the Tanakh Kama would hold that it's okay b'diavad. And then a number of achronim distinguish between bringing the mincha, the halacha, to the mizbeach and putting it on the fire of the mizbeach. The chachamim would hold that bringing it to the mizbeach has to be done in the right hand and has to be done with a kli shartis. But afterwards, you want to take it out of there and put it on the mizbeach. Then the chachamim would hold that it's fine. So he's talking about maybe bring it to the mizbeach with a keli, with a kli shartis in your right hand, and then you can take it out of there and throw it on the mizbeach as well. There is even one of the mefoshim on the Rambam who says that when the Rambam says v'akmotzim, that kmotzim would be kosher, that you can offer with your hands, that he says actually it's supposed to be v'ha'etzim, and in fact kmotzim would in fact be possible purely like the chacham. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Hikta kumsa pamayim kshera. If he offered the koimetz in two pieces, then it's kosher. So, does that mean specifically two pieces and no more than that? It means it can only be twice, but not more than that. He can divide the koimetz into two parts and offer each one separately, but not any smaller than that. Rabbi Yechanan says that it could be twice and even more than that, you could divide it into three or even into smaller pieces. So the Gemara says, "My benai, who? What is the underlying argument?" Amar Rav Zeira, yesh koymetz pachas mishnei zesim. It's like this: does the koymetz have to be at least two kazesim in size? The yesh haktara pachas mikazayis, and are you allowed to offer less than a kazayis at a time? Ikka benai who? Those are the points of argument between Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi saw that in koymetz pachas mishnei zesim. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi holds that by definition, a koymetz is not going to be less than two kazesim. An interesting point in that regard, by the way, is when we usually think of a kazayis, as far as eating matzah, it's because of various chumras from the poskim, therefore we have it, it ends up being considerably larger. So it's hard to say using the size of kazayis that we use nowadays. A koymetz is going to be a minimum of two kazayisim. So this is actually a possible proof that in fact a kazayis is much smaller than we think it is. This is what we're saying, by the way. So what happens if you have a koyan who has tiny hands? Actually, there are mefoshim who say that maybe even such a person would actually be, there are mefoshim who talk about that maybe even a koyan who has such small hands that he couldn't take two kazesim in his koymetz. The Mishnah Lamelach actually brings from Yerushalmi that such a koyan would be posel, and he learns that it means posel as in he'd be a balmum. On the other hand, the Sfasena says no, it just means he's posel to do the kmitzah of a mincha. He'd be kosher for other avodas, even though he has small hands like that. Where we get the idea that it has to be at least two kazesim, so they talk about that it may be a halacha l'moshe m'sinai. In any case, so a koymetz has to be at least two kazesim, but So Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi holds that's how it is. He holds, he learns, whether halacha l'moshe m'sinai or something else, that by definition a koymetz is always going to be at least two kazesim, and he also, so Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi saw that in koymetz pachas mishnei zesim ve'enak torah pachas mikazayis, and furthermore he would hold that you can't offer less than a kazayis at a time. So therefore, according to him, if the koymetz is exactly two kazesim, the most you can do is divide it into two parts and offer a kazayis at a time. But if you were divided into three parts, then each part would be less than a kazayis, and therefore no good. Rabbi Yechanan saw that yesh koymetz pachas mishnei zesim. Rabbi Yechanan holds that doesn't matter. A koymetz can perfectly well be less than two kazayisim. The yesh haktara pachas mikazayis. And it is in fact, you can in fact offer less than a kazayis at a time, and it's considered a valid haftarah. So therefore, if the Mishnah is telling us that you can divide it into two, even though to begin with it's less than two kazayis, and therefore obviously you're not going to have a kazayis in each piece, and nevertheless the Mishnah is allowing it, then Rabbi Yochanan says by the same token, even if you have more than two pieces, it would be fine, even though each one is less than a kazayis. Tosfos points out that the halacha would actually be like Rabbi Shimon Levi, so therefore you actually have to offer a kazayis at a time. We did learn earlier in the second parak of our Masechta that we had a case where a person where we offered a sesame sized piece of the koimitz at a time, and we discussed the implications of that as far as the dinner of pigle, but nevertheless we did say. Even if it is possible to, so here we talked about there where he offered a sesame-sized piece, having in mind that he's going to eat a sesame-sized piece of the shirayim, chutzuzmanai, and then another small piece and another thought, and so forth. So we talked about whether it's pigul or possible, but everybody agreed. We said, ein derech ha-torah b'kach, that is not the normal way, that's not the normal way of offering the koimetz, and that's what we're saying over here, that it really has to be at least a kazayis. So Tosfos also points out, usually indeed we do say that you have to have at least a kazayis for it to be considered burning. Right on Amud Aleph, we said, for example, if it's not a kazayis of chaylev or emurim left, then you can't sprinkle the blood according to Rabbi Yeshua, and that's the halacha. But here, precisely because, since we see by definition a koimetz can be less than two kazayisim, and since we're saying that you're able to bring half a koimetz at a time, then therefore here we have an exception to the rule according to Rabbi Yochanan, and you're able to bring less than a half of a koimetz at a time. But according to the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Levi, and therefore the definition is it's at least two kazayisim, and you have to offer at least a kazayis at a time. There is some discussion. What about, let's say, for example, if one of the burnings was a complete kazayis, would it be fine to do another part as? Would it be part to do? Would it be fine to do another part as less than that? Let's say so. If he did the kazayis first, then could he do the rest of it in smaller pieces or not, or vice versa? Is it just there has to be a kazayis at some point, or does it have to be that every single time it's a kazayis? All right. So the Gemara says Itmar. Let's discuss the point. Koimetz me'emesai matis shirayim lachilo. So you offer the koimetz on a mizbeach. At what point? Now the koimetz has to be burnt on the mizbeach, and then you're allowed to eat the shirayim. At what exact point do the shirayim become mutter to eat? When you put the koimetz on the mizbeach, does it have to be completely burnt? Does it just start to be burnt, etc. Rav Chanina Omer mishim moshel boy asaur. Rav Chanina says once the fire has caught hold of it. So even only a small part of it, but nevertheless, at that point, you can start eating the shirayim. Rabbi Yechanan says only when the fire has caught on to the majority of it. Aparonim is justly the logic behind that. It's not a matter of rubric kekula. It's a matter of that until the fire has caught on to most of it, then you can't really say haftarah, the burning of it, has not really been accomplished. So Amalei Rav Yehuda, l'Rava bar Rav Yitzchak. So Rav Yehuda said to Rava bar Rav Yitzchak, as b'roch time of Rav Yehuda. Let me explain to you where Rav Yehuda gets his point that it has to be that most of it is burnt. Omakra, the Pasuk says, when Sdoim and the other cities were overturned, the Pasuk says that the next morning, Avraham got up in the morning early to daven, and he saw the Hine Ola Kiter Ha'aretz Kiter Akivshon. He saw, behold, the smoke of that area was rising like the smoke of a furnace. The in Kivshon, you know, our parish also, by the way, we have the smoke by Matan Torah is also compared to the smoke of a furnace. It actually points out, by the way, on the Pasuk that it was much more intense than any furnace, but, in the common human experience, the most amount of, at least back then, the greatest amount of smoke you would ever get from someplace is from a furnace, and therefore the Torah uses that as a metaphor. The point is though, says Rabbi Yehuda, the in Kivshon, Malakiter, Adshatasa Urbarubai, the a kiln, an oven, does not start producing a large column of smoke like that until the fire catches on to most of whatever it is you're burning over there. So therefore, by the same thing, since the Torah uses the word Hakatara by the Mincha, by the Poimitz, the Hikmir, so therefore it has to be the same thing that most of it has started to burn. However, the Gemara says, Omer Rovin Barav Abba L'Rava, Amri Tamidah Omer Rav Amram, so Rovin Barav Abba tells Rava, your Tamidim are saying in the name of Rav Amram that it's not so simple. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Ainli Ela Dvarim Shadakam Likra Valayla, we would only know when it comes to things that are supposed, that when it comes to burning things by after nightfall, are you allowed to burn them on a mizbeach? See, we only know things that are normally burnt. For example, the leftover limbs of the oila and the leftover fats of the oila and of other korbanos. There's no question you can go and bring them up to the mizbeach and offer them after the sun is set. And they can be burning, and they can be continuing to burn all night long. That's clear because the Torah tells us that kol ha'layla ad ha'boker, that they can be burning all night until the morning. The question is, though, the Braisa said, dvarim shedavkam likra b'yom, things that are normally offered by day, when a koimetz v'alavoyna v'aktoris, for example, the koimetz, or the levoyna, or ktoris, or minchas koinim, or the mincha of a koin, which is completely burnt, or minchas koin mashiach, and the minchas chavitin of the koin gadol, which is also completely burnt, and a minchas nesachim that comes together with a korban. How do we know with all of those as well, that you're allowed to bring them up to the mizbeach and burn them even after the sun has set? So the Gemara says, wait a minute, what do you mean you can do them after the sun has set? We just said that these are things that are normally burnt by day. Why is the Braisa taking it as a given that you can and seeking a positive to uphold that, to substantiate that? Maybe say, yeah, these things are meant to be offered by day, and therefore they are in fact possible after Shvia. Ella, no, right, you're right. What the Braisa means is Ella im boy hashemesh. The Braisa means to say, how do you know that you can put them on the fire of the mizbeach a moment before Shia? Shemis Akon, Vahochon, Kol Alayla, and they will continue to burn all night. Maybe, so fine, you can't put them on the mizbeach after Shia, they become possible. But how do we know you can put them on a minute before Shia, even though the majority of the burning is going to take place all night? Tamad Loma, therefore the Pasuk says, Zois Torah Sa'ola Riba. Therefore the Pasuk says, this is the Torah of the Ola, which is a ribui, from which we learn that everything that goes on in mizbeach and is being burnt is kosher to be burnt all night. Rashi, by the way, points out that minchas nesachim, when they're brought by themselves, and lachachili, you can burn them at night. Here we're talking about when they're coming together with the korban. But the point is that according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's not considered burning until most of it is burnt. So then in that case, how is it that we're saying then that it's going to work if you put it on a minute before Shia Sahara? So that v'ha'im boya shemesh l'meshkachas l'shakatis u'beruvoi, if you put it on a moment before Shia, it's impossible that fire is going to catch on to most of it. Before Shia, because Shia is coming up very soon. And yet it works. So as we see that you don't need most of it to be burnt in order for it to be considered kito, in order for it to be considered akhtara. And the answer is loikasha kan liklik kan lahatu. The difference is the braisa that's saying you can put it up right before Shia is just that this way the mizbeach grabs a hold of it and now it doesn't become possible by being left after Shia. So then once it's on the mizbeach, then it's immune to that. Kan lahatu, whereas Rabbi Yochanan is talking about in order to make the shirayim be mutter to eat, for that you have to have most of it has to catch on fire. Okay. The Gemara continues, going back to this Braisa, Rabbi Lozer Masnila Miboy Hashemesh, Rabbi Lozer does learn the original wording of the Braisa, that it's saying that you can put them on the Mizbeach Miboy Hashemesh after the sun is set. And the question is, how? We just said that these are things that are supposed to be burnt by day. Umoikim Lover Poikim. He explains, we're not talking about putting that on the Mizbeach to begin with, we're talking about when a piece of them jumps off the fire. As we look back in Zvachim, sometimes you have a piece that has a lot of moisture in it, and therefore that heats up and causes it to jump off the mizbeach like a piece of popcorn. And now the question is whether you put it back. So Rabbi Lozer explains, the Braisa is talking about that when you're talking about a piece like that popped off the mizbeach, that you can put it back even though it's nighttime. The korban itself was supposed to be brought on by day, fine, but if a piece popped off at night, nevertheless you can put it. The same thing when Rabbi Jimmy came. from Eretz Yisrael. He reported in the name of Rav Yana, the same thing with Poikin. The Braisa is not talking about putting them on the Mizeach to begin with. It's talking about them falling off the Mizeach and putting them back at night. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Umi Omer Rav Yana Ithachi, did Rav Yana really say that, that it's talking about Poikin? Of all Omer Rav Yana, but we also find that Rav Yana says, Ketoris Shepokam Agam HaMizdeach, if a piece of Ketoris jumped off the Mizdeach HaPnimi, I feel a crook in Shabbat, even an entire piece. Now, you have the Ketoris is supposed to be ground very finely, but so you may have like a noticeable piece of it. So even you have a piece of it, Ein Machzir Nois, then you don't put it back. The Tonin of Chanina Baman Yumi, Bidvei Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Rav Chanina Baman Yumi taught a braisa that came from the yeshiva of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, that the reason is because the Pasuk says, Asha Kechala Eish, Esa Oila Alam Mizbeach. The Pasuk refers to the what the fire consumes, the Oila, on the Mizbeach. From which we learn, Ikule Oila Atamachsu. So we learn from that only the previously burnt parts of the Oila, the parts that are supposed to be burning, and then fell off the Mizbeach, So atamatsu, those are the things you put back. The atamatsu, you call it ketoris, but you don't put back pieces of ketoris that fell off. So now, the braisa that we said before, that quoted a bunch of things, and mentioned koimetz, lovoina, ketoris, minchas koinim, and minchas koin, mashiach, and minchas nesachim. According to Rav Yana, though, if we're talking about the braisa, it's talking about pieces that fall off, you don't put back pieces of ketoris. And the answer is fine. Seeing the kind of ketoris, you have to delete from that braisa. According to him, you have to delete ketoris because according to him, the point of putting it back on the mizbeach would not apply. Tosfos also points out that, listen, you know, the word oila does not exclude koimetz and levoina because at least they go on the mizbeach achitzon, but the ketoris goes on the mizbeach apnimi, and therefore we have reason to say that this din, and therefore Rav Yana has reason to say that this din of putting it back if it fell off does not apply to him. So the Gemara continues in this connection. Now let's talk about some cases where the koimetz was not offered properly. Here we talked about where the koimetz was offered in halves, and we talked about how much of it has to be burnt in order for the koimetz to be kosher. When Rav Elazar was teaching and explaining the Sechta Menachos, then he brought up the following point. So he brought up the following question. Suppose you place the koimetz on top of the mizbeach, the sidra all of us a ma'arocha, and then you put the wood of the ma'arocha on top of it. So the Chazon Ish explains, in other words, there was already a fire burning over there, so therefore you can say that he accomplished burning it, but now the question is, now you put more wood on top. So does that work? Mahu, would that work? Does the pasuk says Al ha'etzim Amar Achmana? The pasuk says that in the case of an oila and the same thing other korbanos, it has to be placed on the wood. So davka al ha'etzim, so Amar Achmana, davka al ha'etzim. So it has to be specifically on top of the wood and not the other way around. Or, after all, you have another pasuk that says that the fire consumes the oila on the mizbeach, and that implies the oila is directly on the mizbeach, not on top of the wood. So therefore, you could do it either way, and it wouldn't be a problem. Would that be allowed? Actually, no. I skipped a few lines over here. Koimetz for sidur, right? First, the question was if he put the koimetz on the mizbeach, the sidur all of a samarocha, and then he put the wood pile on top of it. Derech haktora b'kacha and derech haktora b'kacha. Is that a valid way? Is that a normal way of offering something on the mizbeach where you put the wood on top of it, or is it not the normal way and the wood has to dafka go first, and therefore if he put the koimetz first, then it would be possible? So that's Rav Elazar's question. And the Gemara says teku, it's left unresolved, so we don't have a clear answer what would be the din in that case. As usual with teku in connection with korbanos, it'll mean that you shouldn't do it l'hatchila. But the Rambam writes you shouldn't do it l'hatchila v'im osa. But if you did it chutzah, then the korban is acceptable. In the case of an animal korban, you don't really have the question, because again, once the blood is sprinkled, the korban is already kosher. The question would really be specifically on a mincha, whether that makes the mincha acceptable. And as the Rambam usually does with these things, he says that b'di'evit it's kosher, because otherwise you're going to make the guy bring chulam ma'azara. Now we have another question, a related question. Boy Chizkiah. So Chizkiah asks a related question. A Vodin Shesidron, if he set up the limbs of the korban, the Sidra Alena Samarocha, and then put the Marocha on top of them, then the question would be Mahu, what's the din? Allah ate some Omar Achmana. This is what I skipped you before. It does the Pasuk say that the limbs of the korban have to be davka on top of the wood? Omar Achmana said the Pasuk, davka Allah ate them, so it has to be specifically on the wood. Or you have another Pasuk, that the fire will consume the Ola on the Mizbeah. So that implies the Ola is directly on the Mizbeah, not on the wood. So therefore, maybe Iboy Hochi Abedi Boy. Maybe you could do it either way. And again, the Gemara says tapu, and the same thing. You shouldn't do that, but the Yevet is fashion. And another related question. What happens if instead of putting the Evorim of the Korban on top of the Marocha, on top of the wood pile and the fire, you put them next to it? Well, the Gemara says, Now, we're going to have later in the Masechta, we're going to have when it talks about the Bazichi Levoina, the spoonfuls of Levoina, on the Shulchan, do they go up? The Pasuk says they go on Al, the Lechem Aponim, doesn't mean literally on top of them, on top of the stacks, it doesn't mean next to. So if we follow the opinion that says that Al means literally on top of Loiti Boilach, then there's no question. It means that obviously the Pasuk is telling you that Ivarim have to be literally on top of the wood. The Allah Eitzim, because the Pasuk says Allah Eitzim. Kitibar Machalibid Manoma Al Basamoch. The question we have a Shoal, who says in the Mishnah over there that Al can mean next to, and therefore he said the Bazikha Levoina, go next to the Lechem Aponim, not on top of them. So then, what would be the din over here? So then one asks, why, what's the problem? Hokanami Al Basamoch. Well, very simple. Say that over here, Al means next to. The Gemara is asking, here's the question. Let's delineate the question. Hochanami al the samuch. Here also, maybe we should say that al means next to, and therefore it would be fine. Or Juma, al ha'etzim, Jumia de al mizbeach. Or maybe the words al ha'etzim is similar to the Pasuk also says over there, al mizbeach, on the mizbeach. And there it also means, obviously, on the mizbeach. Mahosham al mamish. There it definitely has to be on the mizbeach, because you're not burning things near the mizbeach. Hochanami al mamish. Maybe then the same thing. The al in connection with the wood has to be literally on top of it. So again, the Gemara says teiku. So again, we're left with teiku as far as that. So again, you shouldn't do that. But b'di'evad we could say that it's kosher. We did learn in Zvachim, we talked about over there the possibility that maybe even the whole floor of the Azara is kosher to burn Korbanos on. In that case, we would have to say that Al over here doesn't mean literally on the Mizbeach itself, it just means on any area, including in the rest of the Azara, where it's kosher to burn the Korbanos.